Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for listening to this highlight from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, remember, to hear the entire broadcast or more highlights from our recent episodes, you can go to the Austin Hill in the Morning program page on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening. Good morning. It's now 35 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Forthcoming, we check in with our great friend Sam Rohr from the American Pastors Network, a man who travels the country. As the name of his organization implies, he networks pastors around the country. And we'll find out from Sam what is going on in the pulpits of our country and what are the greatest challenges facing those who stand behind them. So that's forthcoming. Also, some very interesting news. If you have ever been a little frustrated, dismayed, troubled, perhaps, and maybe even angered a bit about the push towards transgender policies in elementary, junior high, high schools, colleges, and universities. I mean, that's where this big push to sort of obliterate the distinction between the genders is happening with the youngest of our children. There's big news on that front, and I'll just tell you this much. The reality that male and female are different, that reality is, it is reality, and it's becoming evident all over again in a situation in the province of Ontario in Canada. It's actually a good development here. So I'll tell you about that a little bit later this morning here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. Now, that said, we spoke earlier this week, and we've certainly had headlines from our news partner, SRN Headline News, that you hear at the top and the bottom of each hour here at Faith Radio, reporting to this over and over again. The state of South Carolina, at least huge chunks of it, are now in cleanup mode after some very, very devastating floods. And we talked earlier this week, we spoke to a gentleman, Andy Stevens, a friend of ours here at Faith Radio. He's with WXGR Radio in the Spartanburg region of South Carolina. He's also a member of the Baptist Church himself. And we talked about how Baptist social services and other Christian groups are coming together to offer meaningful aid and assistance in those crises. It does beg an interesting question. Should it be the case? And I don't know. I kind of tend to think that there are hard times before us. Don't know when or where. But should it be the case that we have more crises in our country of a natural disaster sort or maybe even something man-made? Should it be the case that hard times befall us going forward in the future? How can churches best be prepared to offer assistance, be the hands and feet of Jesus, if you will, as the scriptures would call us to be, in the face of present and imminent physical danger, loss of housing, those kinds of things. Well, I thought I'd welcome to the program a gentleman who knows a lot about this. Dwight Brashear is the man appointed by the governor of Louisiana to oversee the evacuation of New Orleans back 10 years ago in the days leading up to Hurricane Katrina. This is the 10-year anniversary, obviously, of Hurricane Katrina. We've talked about that earlier in the fall. It was September of 2005 when that struck. But Dwight Brashear, he's on our newsline. He oversaw the evacuation. It is, as a matter of record, the largest ever evacuation anywhere in the Western world. Quite a feat indeed. He is a man of the church. He heads up a ministry at his own church. He has some thoughts on how churches can step up. Dwight Brashear, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Faith Radio Network.
Well, thank you, Austin, for having me. I appreciate it.
It's good to talk to you. You and I were emailing about this. I know you were recently speaking in some of the Midwestern states on this anniversary season, if you will, of Hurricane Katrina. And you'd mentioned to me in an email, you said, this anniversary brings back some memories that I'd really rather not feel, that I'd rather not ponder. I'm sure that was a very difficult time. Tell us about those memories.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right, Austin, and I appreciate you for acknowledging that. Yeah, it's having served in New Orleans following Katrina, mm-hmm. and watching the flooding, the levees breach, and, just people, human suffering, which is usually a byproduct of such a disaster. when I started to look at the news clips of what was going on in South Carolina, it just, I mean, it brought all of those memories rushing back to me, memories that I was trying now 10 years to put behind me.
I can well imagine. And what do you recall of that period? My understanding is, and I've seen some video of some of your speaking engagements. You went from trying to evacuate, a few hundred people to thousands of people out of New Orleans in a matter of, 24, 36 hours or so. I can't imagine that. Tell us what that was like.
Well, you know, when I first arrived on the scene a couple days following Hurricane Katrina at the request of the governor, as you said, my first question, being in transit, was what did we have in the way of resources, and specifically rolling stock buses. I needed buses. That's what I do for a living. And the response was they had 40 buses with no drivers. They, mm-hmm. You know, the bus basically had been abandoned in a small town called Gonzales, Louisiana, about 30 miles west of New Orleans. And so immediately, I asked the governor for an executive order that would allow me to commandeer vehicles all over the state of Louisiana, because I realized I couldn't move 80,000 people. I couldn't move, 10,000 people or 1,000 people with 40 buses efficiently. And so I had to first get the resources in that I needed. And so she gave me, I think it was Executive Order 31, because there were two executive orders, 31 and 32, dealing with Katrina. And the first one allowed me to commandeer vehicles, buses, school buses, transit vehicles, Greyhound buses, church buses, whatever I could get my hands on.
Wow.
Using her authority, I was able to commandeer vehicles all over the state of Louisiana. And so we went from 40 buses when I first arrived to over 2,000, probably in about 24 to 36 hours. So, yeah, and we started moving people rapidly out of the convention center and the Superdome. And for me, that the relief when I got word that, we had a steady flow of folks coming out of there, it made me feel incredibly, it made me feel good.
I can well imagine. If you just joined us, Dwight Brashears is on our guest line here on our program. He has the very distinct place in history of having been appointed by the governor of Louisiana a little over 10 years ago now to evacuate New Orleans at the onset of what we know as Hurricane Katrina. That was the largest ever evacuation of any sort in the history of our entire nation. The man who oversaw that is on our guest line. You've been watching the suffering in South Carolina. You and I were communicating about that earlier in the week. I know you've done lots of media interviews about this. Earlier this week on this program, we spoke to a gentleman involved with a Baptist church relief organization. And this was Tuesday of this week. And they were still just so in such a state of disarray. They really didn't know what they needed or how best people can help. I know you have a heart and a passion for engaging Christians to do what's helpful, not just have good intentions, but do the right thing. What are you thinking now in terms of Christians around the country stepping up to help there in the state of South Carolina? What give us some wisdom on this.
Well, I think that's a good point you make, a good question that you frame there. As I was thinking about it, and I thought about my experience in New Orleans, I think one of the things that was missing clearly in a disaster, everybody in that area is affected. So the churches, if homes are underwater, then churches are underwater, and so on and so forth. But I think whenever I talk to pastors following Katrina, disaster preparedness is huge. And we talk to individuals about families and how to prepare your family for a disaster and, where to meet mm-hmm. and so on, how to get out of the house or whatever you need to do. But churches need to, I think, do something similar. They have parishioners that need to hear what the plan is and how the church can help them and help others during a disaster. Now, I don't think churches at all should be, first responders, because when the water is rising and we're trying to preserve life, that should be left to the first responders. But I think the churches can get involved with organizations such as the Red Cross. The Red Cross exists, to help people during disasters. They know what to do, how to do it. And I think what churches should do is come together, you know, as a cooperative, and say, what are the resources that we have? Now, this is long before the disaster strikes. Mm-hmm. I think that's important, is that it happens long before the disaster strikes. All of the churches kind of come together and say, these are the resources, because there are big churches, smaller churches, mega churches. What are the resources that we can bring to bear?
Yeah.
And come together and say, and assign every church, you know, whatever the resources are. And then get with the Red Cross, and the Red Cross can help. I mean, there is no better organization, and I'm not, you know, affiliated with the Red Cross at all, but I don't think there's a better organization on this earth to distribute disaster relief than the Red Cross, because they do it every day, and
right,
they do it all over the world, and they do a pretty good job of it.
Well, and as you said, they have trained crisis relief workers. This is not something that a layperson just steps into. It's not like setting up cones in the parking lot at church. This requires some skill. That said, what would you say to those of us in other regions of the country, and you're out on the West Coast, Pacific time zone and whatnot, but those of us who feel like we're way far away from South Carolina, and yet we want to be supportive, we want to do something truly helpful, is it as simple as sending monetary resources, or is there something different or something additional? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think for the most part, being, the miles between, those of us that are lucky enough and fortunate enough or blessed enough to be a great distance from the disaster. Right. Obviously, the power of persistent prayer, as Christians, we believe in that, and I think we do that. I think that's important. And then I think, on the other end, if you really want to help, they don't necessarily need more boots on the ground, as we sometimes say.
Mm-hmm.
They have plenty of people. And you know what? What happens, Austin, is sometimes we're tripping over ourselves, and we're doing more harm than we're doing good, and we're delaying getting the help to the people that really need it. And so, financial assistance is always, always needed, because the groups like the Red Cross and others know how to spend those dollars. And you just have to, I'm one of those people that believes once you give, once you release those dollars, then you have to trust the agency or the organization that you're giving it to.
Sure.
You can't second guess them.
Sure.
And a lot of times we do that. We don't want to give because, I don't know where that money's going. Well, sometimes you have to give on faith. You have to just believe that your giving,
sure,
is going to help. And you know what? If somebody mishandles that money, that's on them, Austin.
Right.
I mean, it really is. It's not on you. You've done your part.
Sure.
You've given. And so, that would be my, a lot of people want to know how they can help. And I think, prayer. And then, of course, if you can afford it, then you give.
I am aware you're a part of a very vibrant church, a non-denominational church there in Las Vegas where you live, Dwight Pershears. And do I hear you saying, though, that you recommend that churches come together and network with other neighborhood churches, even if we have some denominational or maybe even theological differences? We come together and network with one another and plan to cooperate and to offer assistance when and where a disaster strikes in our area. This is something we premeditate, in other words. Am I hearing you correctly?
Absolutely. Because, in my opinion, love is love. And I think any church, regardless of the denomination, at its foundation, if it doesn't have love, agape love, a pure love, a love that God has for all of us, if that's not at its foundation, then it has nothing. And we are put on this earth, the two commandments: one, love your God with all your mind, heart, and soul, and the other is to love your neighbor as yourself. And the
sure.
folks in South Carolina are our neighbors.
Yep. Well,
they're our neighbors, and we're supposed to love them.
Dwight Pershears, the man who was handpicked to oversee the evacuation of New Orleans in the face of Hurricane Katrina, the largest ever evacuation in the history of our United States of America. He knows some things about disaster relief. Dwight, thanks for your time. This is very interesting and very insightful. I appreciate your expertise so much, and I hope you'll come back soon.
Well, thank you for having me, Austin. I appreciate it. And God bless you, Austin, and all your listeners. And thanks for having me.
Appreciate that. 49 minutes past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network. Friday underway. I'm Austin Hill.
Well, thanks again for listening to this highlight from Austin Hill in the Morning. Remember, for more information about this, visit the Austin Hill in the Morning program page on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com.